people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my rock?
Now the N is for not, or no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish it didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Bukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, June 18, 2012. 7 Palestinians and 1 Israeli were killed in several parts of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The details and more are coming up. Stay tuned. The Al-Quds Brigade, the arm wing of the Islamic Jihad, reported that 2 of its fighters were killed Monday after the Israeli military fired a missile at them in Beit Hanun in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. Several residents were wounded in the attack. The brigades issued a press release identifying the slain fighters as Mohammed Shbat, 24, and Ismail Abu Ouda, 21. The group vowed retaliation, saying that armed resistance, quote, is the language Israel understands and the most suitable method to liberate Palestine, unquote. Adam Abu Salmiya, spokesperson of the medical and emergency services in Gaza, said the attack targeted a motorcycle driving near an agricultural school in Beit Hanun. Earlier on Monday morning, 3 Palestinians and 1 Israeli were killed during clashes that took place along the Egyptian border with Israel. The army stated that a Palestinian armed group on the Egyptian side of the border fired a shell at the army before engaging in an automatic fire battle. On Sunday evening, the Israeli Air Force bombarded a blacksmith workshop in Rafah in the southern part of the Gaza Strip, leading to extensive damage and at least 5 injuries, including 1 child, according to medical sources in Gaza. On Sunday night at midnight, the Israeli Navy attacked a Palestinian fishing boat in Palestinian territorial waters in Gaza and kidnapped 4 fishermen. In other news, Palestinian medical sources reported that 2 Palestinians were shot and killed on Sunday and 1 resident was injured after an Israeli settler opened fire at them near As-Samoa, a town in the southern West Bank district of Hebron. The sources identified the 2 as Naim al-Najjar, 33, and Anwar Abid Rabbo, 35. The settler who opened fire at them is a truck driver. Eyewitnesses reported that the settler opened fire at a group of Palestinian construction workers and fled the scene. On her part, member of the Executive Committee of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the PLO, Dr. Hanan Ashrawi, denounced the attack and stated that, quote, the current racist formation of the Israeli government, the Knesset and the Israeli military granted the settlers a green light to conduct organized crime and to directly target the unarmed Palestinian people in the West Bank, unquote. In a separate incident, Israeli soldiers invaded on Monday at dawn the northern West Bank city of Jenin, the Jenin refugee camp, and the towns of Borkin, Al-Hashimiyya, and Kafrit. Soldiers broke into and searched several homes. Local sources reported that more than 10 armored military vehicles invaded the Jenin refugee camp and fired rounds of live ammunition into the air, an issue that led to clashes between the soldiers and dozens of youth who held stones and empty bottles at the invading army. However, no injuries were reported. That's all from IMEMC News. This was the Monday, June 18th, daily roundup news from the occupied Palestinian territories. This was the Monday, June 18th, daily roundup news from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. This report has been brought to you by Hassan Kassis and me, George Rishmau.
Egypt stands at the brink of military dictatorship, revolution, or civil war. The Egyptian military has essentially carried out a coup against the civilian government in Egypt in response to the Muslim Brotherhood's probable electoral victory over a pro-Mubarak candidate for president. Shortly after the polls closed on June 17th, the generals gave themselves massive new powers and declared that the president would be subservient to them and without any real power. Days earlier, on the 14th of June, the Egyptian Supreme Court dissolved parliament again because Muslim Brotherhood candidates had won the election during the winter. The Supreme Council of the Armed Forces is now claiming legislative power, meaning the military makes laws for itself. That is a coup. Pure and simple, the pro-Mubarak forces are now disputing the Muslim Brotherhood candidate's win in the presidential runoff, but if he had lost, what reason would there be for the coup? Top headlines in Egyptian newspapers include "The military hands power to the military" and "A president with no powers." Nobody really knows if Egypt is going back to January 2011, all the way back to 1954, or something else. Some are comparing the situation to the start of the Algerian Civil War in 1991, again with generals scrapping an election Islamists had won or would have won. The question is thus, will Egypt become a military dictatorship as before, or will the moves by the military to scrap the results of an election lead to revolution in the streets?
As NATO is preparing to exit from the war in Afghanistan, the alliance will move tons of military equipment, such as tanks and artillery, through the Central Asian nations of Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan. The Soviet Union used a similar route in withdrawing its forces from Afghanistan in 1988 and 1989. The planned 2014 exit route through Central Asia was prompted by deteriorating relations between Pakistan and the United States. In addition to being embarrassed by the May 2, 2011 U.S. raid into Pakistani territory that killed Osama bin Laden, officials are upset after NATO forces mistakenly killed 24 Pakistani soldiers near the Afghan border. In response, Pakistan has banned the use of its airspace for NATO missions since last November. Since the 9/11 attacks in the U.S., 90% of NATO supplies for the Afghan war have been trucked through Karachi, a route that is now shut down. Because of concern about a volatile power vacuum on its border, China is now making plans to boost its involvement in Afghanistan after NATO troops leave. China wants to prevent the resurgence of separatist Uyghur fighters already rumored to be in Pakistan's tribal areas. Most of China's anticipated aid will go to building infrastructure and training Afghan police and soldiers. The aid will be coordinated by the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, a security alliance that includes Russia, China, and several Central Asian nations.
Afghanistan. Today, NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan. Saturday, NATO is reporting the deaths of two soldiers of unreported nationality from unspecified insurgent attacks, one in eastern Afghanistan and one in southern Afghanistan. Kapiza, Afghanistan. Today, a suicide bomber detonated his explosives, killing four police and five civilians. 17 people were wounded in the blast. The dead included the local police commander, two of his bodyguards, and his son. Afghanistan, last Thursday, a suicide car bomber hit another military base used by NATO forces and their Afghan puppets. This while a report has emerged that a similar suicide bombing on the 1st of June against a NATO base was far more damaging than previously reported. An estimated 1,500 pounds of explosives were used in that bombing. Both a dining hall and a post exchange were leveled, and over 100 American soldiers were treated for minor injuries, in addition to two soldiers killed and over three dozen seriously wounded. They claim to have repelled the attack and secured the base after that bombing, so how do we know Thursday's bombing didn't also inflict heavy damage? Afghanistan, ongoing. As Canadian troops withdraw from Afghanistan, they're being forced to abandon their equipment due to the closure of a convoy route through Pakistan. That closure was in response to a deadly U.S. airstrike inside Pakistan. Meanwhile, Iraq is still burning, even though the U.S. military has left. Baghdad, Iraq, Saturday, another car bombing killed 32 Shiite pilgrims. This just days after a coordinated string of over a dozen car bombings. Saladin Province, Iraq, Sunday. Two cops were killed and 26 people wounded by a booby-trapped car and a roadside bomb in two separate incidents. Mr. Barack Obama, 8 years of occupation didn't stabilize Iraq. What makes you think you can do any better in Afghanistan? Now is the time to cut your losses and pull the plug. Bring all the troops home today.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me, ain't going back again.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com. On the 14th of June, regarded by the United States as Flag Day, D.C. statehood activists held a D.C. flag tattoo fest and flag raising in DuPont Circle.
Okay, this prize is going to go to the person here with the biggest D.C. flag tattoo. If you think you've got what it takes to win this flag, let me see you up front.
Over here.
Elbow's not going to cut it. I just saw a whole bicep. What else do we have here? Let me see these tattoos. I can't judge it unless I see the full spectrum, people. That's, oh yeah, bring it up here. That's an entire shoulder blade. I think that's the biggest. Okay. Can anybody top a shoulder blade? Shoulder blade going once. Shoulder blade going twice. That's right, cameras. Get up here and love this DC. Get up close.
On a more serious note, here's some remarks from Eleanor Holmes Norton at the DC Flag Day event in DuPont Circle on the 14th of June.
Eleanor Holmes Norton.
Thank you. Yeah, I love DC and I love DC and I love DC Vote for all you are doing to raise the flag, the DC flag, that is. I do want to thank the organizers for the second annual DC Flag Day. Yeah. My friends, there is no better symbol to raise for what we're entitled to and what we don't have. Now, we love the American flag.
We love.
All we're asking on DC Flag Day is for the American flag wavers to love us back. Oh.
You heard that, GOP.
They love our money. The $3 billion that you, D.C. taxpayers, give to support the United States of America. They take that willingly, and if you don't give it willingly, they know how to get it. All we're asking for is a little D.C. Flag Day respect. Now, good things happen on the day you raise the flag. I've just come from the D.C. Appropriation Committee. Now, that's controlled by the Democrats. That's why in that bill there is a provision to keep D.C. from being shut down if the federal government shuts down.
Yeah.
Now, that's what they almost did to us three times last year, because they won't let our money stay in the district. The money was over there. The budget was over there. The federal government almost shut down. Therefore, we, who were no part of that fight, also would have shut down. I tell you, my friends, that means we were getting no respect. And when we raise the flag on Flag Day, we remind the Congress that there are at least two flags to respect in the District of Columbia.
That's right.
You know, it's the flag that flies over the Capitol, and there's a flag that flies over the Wilson Building. And we want equal respect. We want our money to be respected by letting us decide how to spend it. We want our full voting rights in the House, and there's another House, the Senate of the United States. And above all, we want a flag, we want to make the American flag far more beautiful. All the American flag needs is one more shining star. Give us our star, give us our rights. Thank you for all you're doing here on DC Flag Day.
That was Miss Eleanor Holmes Norton reminding everyone it's time to end the excuses and make DC a state now. For the past several years, one of the most unsavory participants in Capitol Pride, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender pride, has been Wells Fargo Bank. It has been verified that there is at least one trans woman locked up and being abused in private prisons funded by Wells Fargo, yet Wells Fargo has a nerve to show up at Pride. At about 1 p.m. on Sunday, the 10th of June, protesters confronted Wells Fargo at D.C.'s Capitol Pride Festival.
Okay, what happened when a group of protesters went into the Gay Pride Festival after Wells Fargo Bank?
We dressed as pirates, we went in, and we started chanting, Free CC, fuck Wells Fargo.
CC is a trans woman locked up in one of Wells Fargo's private prisons.
Some people jumped on stage, and they ended up pushing people off. We threw streamers, little paper streamers.
What was the reaction?
They weren't sure what was going on, but eventually they called in Pride security and police started coming, and they also had a guy on the truck, very large, well-built, to come out and sort of push people around and, in general, be a thug. He sort of just moved around their entire tent, bus, or truck, or whatever it was, and just kept chanting and moving around.
Yeah, did you all refer to the GEO group in the private prisons?
Yes.
What did you say about them?
Mainly that they need to stop funding private prisons and Free CC. Donald, I believe her name is.
Who is that?
She's a trans woman who's locked up in one of Wells Fargo's prisons.
So we actually have direct proof of a trans woman being locked in one of Wells Fargo's prisons, and yet Wells Fargo has the nerve to show up at Pride?
Yes. Apparently, on the West Coast, I believe in Seattle, someone threw some sort of incendiary device through one of their windows over it.
Ooh!
I don't have confirmation of this, but I've heard it from several people, so it sounds legit.
And yet they still show up at Pride.
They have a lot of gall. Eventually, after some shoving from the goons and them blasting music at us, being surrounded by cops, someone had gone around to the other side, not sure what they were doing. But the cops ended up arresting him.
Any charges filed?
I'm not sure what the charges were.
Was he released or held?
I think he's been released.
And how long did all this last?
Probably 10 minutes.
In front of over 100,000 people at the Pride Festival.
Yeah, there were a lot of people looking on, wondering what was going on. And we ended up having to walk all through Pride, around Pride, with someone in handcuffs. So people definitely were looking and were curious.
Oh!
I think it did have a good effect.
All right, because I showed up probably around 3:45, and I asked them if they had any statistics for how many GLBT folks were locked up in private prisons run by the GEO group in which they had investments, and they just clammed up and wouldn't say a word. Do you think they'll be back next year?
I doubt it, especially with this guy trying to goad people into starting fights and just the reaction and having massive crowds gathered around the Wells Fargo wondering what's going on.
They've been a major presence at Pride for years. It looks like they're trying to play on all that country western crap to get gay men to open accounts.
It's possible, but I honestly think that they're not going to be allowed back.
Not going to be allowed back?
I'm hoping, with everything that happened, with an arrest and general disruption of Pride.
And we need to make sure that the Pride organizers get the message that these people are locking up GLBT folks, and that might be enough to do the job.
Exactly.
Well, well, well. Wells Fargo shows up at Pride even after CC Donalds, a trans woman, is locked in a Wells Fargo's prison, and they have the nerve to think that people at Pride are going to want to open accounts in their crooked bank? I don't think so. Wells Fargo, get the hell out of Pride. I don't want to see your crooked little stagecoach in the parade or in the festival next year. And Pride organizers, I don't care how much money Sugar Daddy Wells Fargo has. It's time to end that bad romance with a crooked bank that is jailing gay, lesbian, bi, and trans folks. On the 13th of June, CEO Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase appeared before Congress to explain the over $2 billion his bank lost gambling on Wall Street like so many games of dice. He got an unexpected surprise as protesters disrupted the hearing and heckled him in person, demanding an end to foreclosures by J.P. Morgan Chase.
Promised me foreclosures for 3 years, and you sold my house from underneath me. Why don't you face the people that you foreclosed for?
Stop! Foreclosures! Stop! Stop!
Six people were arrested in this protest, including Ty Berry of Code Pink and Deborah Harris, a retired D.C. paramedic and EMT who is resisting an attempt by J.P. Morgan Chase to foreclose on her home with help from Occupy D.C. and Occupy Our Homes. It was on her behalf that Occupy Our Homes invaded the mortgage offices of J.P. Morgan Chase on the 4th of June, forcing them to agree to discuss modifying her underwater loan instead of throwing her out in the street. The very next day, the 5th of June, was the very violent eviction of Dawn Butler, a tenant whose landlord was foreclosed on by J.P. Morgan Chase. Under D.C. law, she was supposed to have the right to buy the house, but J.P. Morgan Chase ignored the law. Not only that, the U.S. Marshals were inclined to back off the eviction when they saw Dawn's home barricaded and defended by an estimated 50 Occupy protesters. Instead, J.P. Morgan Chase demanded the marshals evict immediately. This forced a violent confrontation, leaving three protesters injured and one U.S. Marshal injured by reckless procedures by the rest of his team.
U.S. Marshals have just torn down a blockade made of plastic milk cartons. Underneath that blockade are two of the last remaining Occupy D.C. protesters. They have chained themselves to that blockade, and the marshals have just torn down not only the blockade but also the front door. They are surrounded by dozens of angry Occupy D.C. protesters.
Instead of arresting six protesters on the 13th of June at the J.P. Morgan Chase hearings, maybe the U.S. Capitol Police should have arrested Jamie Dillon, the CEO of Chase, the moment he stepped through the door for gambling with taxpayers' money.
Fold him, let him hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me.
I love it.
Love game, intuition, play the cards with spades to start.
Welcome to War of the Trees on WSQT Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington.
There is unrest in the forest. There is trouble with the trees. For the maples want more sunlight, and the oaks ignore their pleas.
In a world of corporate domination and utter ruin, whosoever shall have the courage to take direct action against those who are ruining our planet and our very lives. The 11th of June is a day on which anarchists and Earth Liberation activists carry out solidarity actions in the name of prisoners captured by the state for real or alleged actions in the same movement. This year, one solidarity action smashed out every window of the Washington Loggers Association's building in Olympia, Washington State. This communique was issued after the action. On the night of June 11th, in the sleepy town of Olympia, Washington, we laid waste to the Washington State Loggers Association building, breaking out all 24 of their windows and leaving the painted message, "You are never safe. Go log in hell, Circle A." Roughly a decade after the fervent period of Earth Liberation activity that occurred in the late 90s and early 2000s, we find ourselves in a far more hopeless situation, immersed in an ever-deepening desert. Some cling to the idea of hope, and others view this as nothing more than a deceitful delusion. Neither narrative concerns us. What truly concerns us is that the living world around us is dying, and that the strength of our heart atrophies through inaction. How many of us feel disgust at being embedded in a concrete jungle, a suburban wasteland, an ocean of meaninglessness? How many of us mourn the yawning devastation of a clear cut? While smashing out two dozen windows was only a humble act of revenge in the face of the wholesale destruction of wildlife, comrades, let us cease to be eaten up inside by our unactualized rage. This is an international call to wage war on all those who profit from the rape of the earth. We greatly embrace and encourage those whose seeds of ferocious intentions have lain dormant thus far to burst forth and raise the cities to the ground. Those cities depend on an empire, a civilization that depends on the ensnarement and suppression of a wild world of meaning and beauty. For every action, there is a reaction. So as civilization abuses and mistreats fire, fire will abuse civilization.
Throughout modern history, cities have burned. Rome burned. The civilized order will come to know the true purifying power of fire soon enough. Like wildfires whipping through forests, clearing out all the dead wood, making room for new growth to emerge. Civilization will perish in a firestorm, clearing the way for light to sprout and grow unmolested. This was done in solidarity with Marie Mason and Eric McDavid, Luciana Tortuga, the Kimke Forest Defenders, all ELF and ALF prisoners and fighters, the individual tending towards the wild, still in prison Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, and all those who acted in vengeance, in defiance, and all who got away. May you forever run free for the terrifying freedom. Long live all Earth warriors! That is the communique that was issued after the 11th of June window-smashing attack on the Washington Loggers Association building in Olympia, Washington State.
Well, DNA, it's natural, it's the building block of life. And when the good Lord put it together, you know, I think he did it upright. He made lots of different organisms, a complex web of life. Each one depended on another, and so the circle, it closed up tight. But then along came a man and a microscope, and he separated the genes. And when he put them all back together, he made lots of strange, unnatural things. And now food crops grow on the ocean floor, cows that grow on trees. Now the ranchers gaze while their oysters graze on grass that depends on a hormone spray in our genetically modified world.
On Tuesday, the 12th of June, the EPA held a hearing on the subject of revoking the registration of atrazine, an herbicide made by Syngenta and used on corn, which increases yields by an estimated 1%. In return for that 1% increase in corn yields, atrazine is literally pushing frogs and other amphibians to extinction. It does this by forcibly turning male frogs into transgender frogs, making them sterile in the process. That means no tadpoles, no frogs the next year, and a lot more flies and mosquitoes. You may remember Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, about the effects of massive agricultural use of DDT and other pesticides. Now there's an herbicide that threatens us with a spring that is not silent, but the very opposite, overrun with the buzzing of flies and a distinctive whine of disease-carrying mosquitoes. Here's part of the testimony of Dr. Carrie Krieger of Save the Frogs at an EPA hearing in a process that could cancel atrazine's registration with the EPA, thus banning its use.
So, it's up to you to save the frogs. And one way we can do that is to ban atrazine, one of the most commonly used pesticides on the planet, banned in the European Union since 2004, consistently turns up in American groundwater, rainwater, tap water. Numerous peer-reviewed scientific publications from laboratories around the world have demonstrated that atrazine is extremely harmful to environmental and public health. So let's talk about some of the consequences of atrazine use. And I'll say, from going to scientific conferences around the world for the past 9 years and talking to lots of amphibian biologists, the vast majority of the world's amphibian biologists agree that atrazine is extremely harmful to amphibians. Abundant scientific literature from labs around the world has demonstrated atrazine's harmful effects on an array of wildlife. Atrazine's effects on wildlife include demasculinizing and feminizing the gonads of exposed males, testicular lesions, decreased penis size, disorders in accessory sex organs, severely impaired male reproductive behaviors, impaired fertility, delayed puberty, induced abortion, reduced anti-predator behaviors, diminished growth rates, reduced survival rates, decreased cellular immunity, and increased trematode infections that result in malformations such as eight-legged Pacific chorus frogs or even ones with 16 legs, which I've seen pictures of. So we hear lots of propaganda and lies that come from Syngenta and the pesticide lobby, and I'm sure we'll hear a lot of those today.
Dr. Krieger went on to point out that atrazine gives very little back in return for what it does to frogs.
Would those who choose to continue to spray pesticides on their corn go bankrupt due to an atrazine ban? That's unlikely, as atrazine only increases corn yield by 1 to 6%. Atrazine is an outdated 50-plus-year-old chemical. Technology can surely make up for the decreased 1 to 6% of corn if we put our minds to it. This is the 21st century, after all, not 1956. Indeed, Germany and Italy grow more corn now than they did prior to banning atrazine in 1991. Humans have successfully grown corn, sugar, sorghum, and rice without pesticides for thousands of years. With modern organic farming techniques and investment in technology and organic farming education, I have no doubt that American farmers can not only remain a world leader in food production in the absence of atrazine, but that we can grow and distribute food that is safe for human consumption and safe for wildlife.
Let's just hope the EPA listens to science and not to the lies of Syngenta. Mosquito bites itch like hell, and no frogs means the mosquitoes they won't be eating will be eating from our arms and legs instead.
Sizing McDonald's.
This is a Big Mac counterattack. Organic fanatics are sick of being stabbed in the back with clown fat, so we get fat with the beat, not with the meat. And we fight right back with fat funk against this fast food junk. A propaganda pumping punks calling it food. I think they're confused. A killer sweet treat to see, let loose a few. For a fast food attitude, mad cow, cash crop mentality. Growing instant gratification, sowing seeds of slavery. It's happened up the pace of the lab rat race. The Soma Coma Kamikaze selling pig fat as milkshakes. Border slaughter trauma, sick cows line mass graves. Serve you up a dead planet on the skin bones of slaves. Serve you up a dead planet on the skin bones of slaves.
Mass production, mass society. Everything the same, junk food, crap jobs.
The high fat intake, the high animal protein intake, the lack of these other things lead into the kind of diseases that actually kill 3/4 of us in Western society before our time.
Yeah, this Ronnie Mac heart attack packed is manufacturing, distracting plastic package, false facts, hormone pump, disease, dump, cow pus, and clown fat.
Yum.
Got truth trembling on the corporate water torture rack.
Would you like lies with that?
Or fries with beef fat? What about terrified cries of forests fallen for Big Mac? Genetically modified alibis for the starving poor. Third world food stolen for Mac's first world exports. Straight to your first world first class. Neoliberal sat on a fat ass. Free market disaster task, I gotta ask. How much land did you steal for that happy meal? Yeah, it's a crap. Big deal when you see the life it killed.
The most important issues I think that any of us have to face living our ordinary lives.
Just destroying rainforests.
Without advertising, McDonald's wouldn't exist. It's all image, and you know, if you can get behind that and expose the reality of the corporation, then you know, there's nothing left.
Just destroying rainforests.
Fried lies for another colonized genocide attempt. Fat corporate cats hell bent on monoculture, madness and mayhem to rupture the structure of diversity. It's heresy, embarrasses me, the golden arch glory of modern humanity. The greasy greed feast of fearful disease meat, turning animals into cannibals and humans into sheep. You're being cloned like robots in a war machine factory, cause they're harvesting lies like they be harvesting wheat. Overworked employer, exploited, underpaid. The youth of today being waylaid into early graves. By fat corporate cats, deep fried desires, hellfires and death flies upside. Dissolving, remolding their lives in animal fat. It's a cannibal act, a criminal fact. The capital pact is stabbing you in the back. Yeah, deep fried in animal fat. It's a cannibal act. The capital pact is stabbing you in the back with a criminal fact. Golden arch, idealistic, satanic earth demolition religion. Your monoculture style is genocide. Full scale culture assaulter like a Christian mission. Your mindshare warfare is totalitarian tunnel vision. Your mindshare warfare is totalitarian tunnel vision.
It's motherfucker taka terrorism.
Research shows that the Golden Arches are now more recognized than the Christian cross.
Yeah, I ain't bowing down to no pedophile clown. No raping the minds of children, turning smiles to frowns. So we shouting out loud with our stereo sound. Bring the whole fat evil Mac Empire down.
Criticizing McDonald's.
On the 13th of June, members of Nigeria's Ogoni indigenous nation living in a D.C. area showed up at the Nigerian embassy to demand that the government of Nigeria and Shell Oil clean up the oil that they have been spilling on Ogoni land since before 1960. One of the protest organizers bluntly called Royal Dutch Shell a terrorist organization due to the thousands of Ogoni people who have died from exposure to benzene and other pollutants from the oil.
The Nigerian government and Shell have been in Ogoni exploiting the Ogoni people for, since 1958 when oil was struck in Ogoni. Since then, Ogoni has gotten nothing from the multi-billion dollars petrodollars that has been taken or extracted from Ogoni. What the Ogoni people has is only a dying environment, a degraded environment that the United Nations Environmental Programs report that came out on August 4th, 2011 confirmed. Ogoni people are drinking water that is 900 times higher in benzene than the World Health Organization's standard, even the Nigerian standard.
Wasn't the environment once referred to as being shell-shocked?
Yeah, it has been a shell-shocked land, and it remains a shell-shocked land. The government of Nigeria and Shell are in collaboration. They consciously, deliberately are doing this thing, you know, to kind of exterminate the Ogoni people. You know, currently, the problem is that the Ogoni people stop Shell and the Nigerian government from taking their oil. You can't continue taking people's wealth for over 35 years and don't give them anything back. And you expect the people to just sit down and say thank you.
And instead, when people don't say thank you, their answer has at least once been hangings.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You might remember that. Ken Sirawiwa and eight other Ogoni activists were hanged by a military government in 1993 for opposing Shell's exploitation of Ogoni land.
We're trying to let the world know that Ogoni is not at peace. Ogoni want peace. And one way Ogoni can get peace is if the Nigerian government decides to be a government and not protect a company such as Shell over the Ogoni people. Ogoni people happen to be Nigerians, and Nigeria has the duty, the responsibility to protect the Ogoni people. And so we are doing this to let the world know what's going on in Ogoni, and we need justice. All we're looking for is justice. We're trying to put pressure on the Nigerian embassy to pressure the Nigerian government, because those of us here in America, Ogonis and our friends, we have the responsibility, we have the duty to pressure the Nigerian government, to also pressure, pressure the Nigerian embassy, to pressure the Nigerian government, you know, to clean the Ogoni environment. There's no two ways we can do that. We are trying to, you know, let the world hear us, let the Nigerian government hear us, that it is not only the Ogoni people at home that are crying, but the Ogoni people here in America and their friends, Nigerians and other oppressed Nigerians are crying, because anything that happened to Ogoni would serve as a kind of model, especially in environmental cleanup.
This is rather like what's going on with the Lakota people here in North America with the tar sands mining in Alberta, Canada, and the Keystone XL pipeline. Same stuff. Shell's actually worse than BP, but because they commit their crimes in Africa, a lot of people don't care.
Definitely so. And I mean, the most common of the issue is that the Nigerian government is allowing Shell to do that. Take, for instance, BP in America, the issue that just happened.
Big spill.
The big spill. The American government, because it choose to be a government, decide to hold BP accountable. But in Nigeria, that's not the case.
Yeah, what I'm guessing is that Shell takes all the garbage and the crap they wouldn't dare use in Alaska and takes it down to Nigeria to use.
They do all kinds of things. Shell is a quasi-government in Nigeria. Shell is one of the most deadliest companies in the world that you can ever think of. Shell is, I have declared Shell a terrorist organization.
It's appropriate. It's like combining Blackwater
with Exxon.
Shell fits that description of a terrorist organization because when you terrorize the environment is man's first right. If you don't live in an environment that is secure, that is safe, you cannot live, you cannot even breathe to claim other rights, be they political, social, or economic. And so Shell is a terrorist organization, so long as I and the Ogoni people are concerned.
And aren't there supposed to be procedures for cutting off money and assets of terrorist organizations?
Well, that is what we should have done. But you know what's going on in the world today, where oil is important to the government. Governments around the world are so concerned about, you know,
under the same rules applied to Al-Qaeda, there should be an embargo on all oil from Shell.
Definitely. And that's why we boycott Shell. We've been asking people to join us and boycott Shell.
I haven't bought Shell gas since 1993 after the hangings.
And that's a great thing. Thank you very much for doing that.
After about an hour and a half of the protest, several representatives of the Nigerian embassy emerged, making many promises about how the government would indeed start cleaning up the mess they and Shell made together 10 months after a UN report on the situation.
I'm going to feel that this message will get to the highest level.
Expeditiously,
it will be there. And then let me also reiterate that we are on the same side. The Ogoni people are Nigerian people.
Definitely.
Here we represent Nigeria. We don't represent any individual ethnic group. And the overall well-being of all Nigerians is the overall objective of President Goodluck Jonathan. And he will stop nowhere but to see that he gets the best for the Nigerian people, including the Ogoni people. And we are very delighted, and we share the same view with you. And I'm very glad you also mentioned that Nigeria and Shell team up to see that this clean up will take place. It will take place. Don't mind the challenges. The challenges you see, the delays are the same challenges most developing countries face. We are faced with so many challenges, as you know, in Nigeria, security challenges, developmental challenges, and all that. But we are not by any means shaky in our responsibility as a government, as a people, to deal decisively with the problem.
A whole lot more words than that were spoken, all bearing the same promises. Government of Nigeria, the Ogoni people are going to hold you to these promises. To everyone else out there, if you don't believe in stealing oil, not cleaning up spills dating back as far as 1970, and hanging anyone who complains, something Shell has never apologized for, there's something you can do about it. Boycott Shell, don't buy a single drop of their blood gasoline.
A world that they cannot survive in.